Please be seated. I recently finished a wonderful book entitled The Leftovers by Tom Perotta. This story is the story of what would happen if the rapture actually took place and millions of people just disappeared from the earth. Now, just for the record, the concept of the rapture is really a relatively recent Christian doctrine with roots back to 17th century Puritanism, and it's a doctrine that has evolved and widened based on what I believe is a corrupt understanding of certain passages from Thessalonians and Revelation. Even those who believe in this doctrine, which I am not one of, can't agree on what events the actual doctrine is supposed to include. But do not confuse this book with the Left Behind series from a few years ago. This book is sarcastic. It is tongue-in-cheek. It is funny. Just put it this way, the rapture didn't happen as planned. Among the well-known who disappeared were J-Lo, Vladimir Putin, Adam Sandler, the Pope, and Greta Von Susteren from Fox News. Left hanging around on Earth were irritated, super devout Christians, along with all sorts of ordinary, bewildered folks. What's wonderful about this book, though, is how woven through the absurd is a measure of reality. The characters show a variety of coping techniques to being leftovers that includes indifference and avoidance and depression and freaking out and the joining of cults. The most intriguing of the cults, though, are the guilty remnant who, for some reason, take a vow of silence and pledge never to appear in public without a lit cigarette. And despite the craziness in these characters, the author never draws a distinction between good characters and bad ones. Instead, recognizing all as merely human, ordinary people dealing with an extraordinary situation. The rapture's failure to conform to biblical prophecy has driven some people over the edge, though. There is the barefoot people movement who believe that the proper response to these mass disappearances is to pretty much party down 24/7. There's the healing hug movement whose leader is convinced that he will father a child who will save the world. But my favorite character is the Reverend Matt Jameson. He decides that the whole thing really isn't the rapture because apparently he missed the cut. He weeps frequently, and all he can talk about is how unfair it was that he is still around. The minister's response to this injustice is to publish a National Enquirer-type newsletter that's full of scurrilous gossip about those who disappeared. Yet I think what struck me most about this book has to do with perspective. Because like the Reverend Jameson, every single character in this story, regardless of where they are or who they are or what they believe, every single one of them felt like this great disappearance was blatantly unfair to them. And such unfairness is where we find ourselves in today's gospel lesson. This parable is unfair. But I guess we ought to get used to that, because the gospel is often unfair. Just when we think we've got everything figured out, Jesus, I think, enjoys turning things around and upside down and changes everything about what we think life in relation to God should be. But despite all that, I think it's also important to know what's going on in this gospel context to understand where Jesus is going with all this. Because like the great theologian Yogi Berra once said, you got to be careful if you don't know where you're going because you might not get there. Ponder that one this afternoon. You see, right before this parable, Peter has asked Jesus what he and the other disciples can expect in the way of a reward for following him. After all, there's got to be some kind of payback for all this, doesn't there? So Jesus promises 12 thrones in a world to come. He tells this story and then says the words that we've just heard. But many that are first will be last, and the last will be first. Then right after this parable, James and John's mother comes to Jesus trying to make sure that her sons will get the finest thrones in that world to come. So you see, for Jesus, telling this story at this particular point actually makes a lot of sense. His disciples are jockeying for position. They're hoping for the best seats. They want to be first in line. They want the prime real estate. And it makes sense for Jesus to tell this parable about the workers in the vineyard because his own disciples don't seem to understand that there's a lot to come before they can expect a seat in that kingdom. And it also makes sense if we admit it because we've all been there before, just like them, somehow jockeying for position, trying to be the first in line. So the way the story ends isn't fair, is it? But why are we so convinced this story is not fair? After all, the vineyard belongs to the landowner, and the truth is he can do as he pleases with what he owns. He has kept his bargain to those who worked all day in the hot sun. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me, the manager asks? Or are you envious because I'm so generous? You bet we are. Because what the manager has done is not fair. And all of us human beings have this innate sense of what is fair and what is not. And since we know life isn't fair, that life doesn't always throw at us what is equal and just and earned and deserved, it makes it all the more important that we should be able to depend on God to be fair. God should be the good manager who keeps up with who did what, how hard the work was, and how long we've labored in the field. But that's just not how it works in the gospel world. The people at the end of the line, those who have worked the least, get the same reward as those who worked all day. It really isn't fair if you picture yourself in that situation. And you want to know why it's not fair? It's because every one of us in this room hear this parable from the front of the line. We are the people who have worked all day, and we've worked hard, and we deserve more than they do. But what if we're mistaken? If you have lived your life at the front of the line, then good for you. You're lucky. Not blessed, you're lucky. But allow yourself to do this. Allow yourself to consider the fact that maybe, just maybe, we are really the people in the back of the line that Jesus is talking about. It changes everything, doesn't it? All of a sudden, there are reasons why we weren't there at dawn to work. Maybe we didn't know that there was work to be done or that the manager was hiring on that particular day. Maybe something happened at home, a sick child. All of a sudden, there are lots of reasons for someone to be at the end of the line. And maybe only God can sort those reasons out. All of a sudden, we're the ones who celebrate the manager's generosity. My friends, our God is not fair. And we must let go of our insistence that this is a story about justice. It is not. It's a story about grace. For reasons we may never understand, God unfairly loves each of us unconditionally and loves to reverse the order of things just when we in our wisdom seem to have it all figured out. And depending on where you find yourself in line at any one time, that can be some awfully powerful good news. Because if God is not fair, then maybe there's a chance we'll get paid more than we're worth, that we'll get more than we deserve, that we'll get a good seat, even if we are last in line. Not because of who we are, but because of who God is. God love you. Amen.